Eile toledot Noach, Noach ish tzadik, tamim haya bedorotav, et hoelokim hithalech Noach. OU Israel presents...
In. Welcome.
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky. And this show is for Parshat Noach, which happens also to be Rosh Chodesh Mar Cheshvan. And I shouldn't say happens to be, because that will be something we will talk about as well. I have to apologize for the last 2 weeks of not having a show. I have official excuse that Thursdays, two in a row, or Yom Tov. I had wanted to try at least for one of the shows earlier in the week and have it recorded, and it just didn't work out. It was a busy period of time, but we're back. So this is the beginning of normal life, quote unquote, and that's the story. Recording and first broadcast is Yom Chamishi, Thursday, the 29th of Tishrei, the 7th day of October. Tishrei, I should remind you, we're in the year 5771 that we have begun not that long ago. And tonight, Thursday night, is Leil Rosh Chodesh. It's a 2-day Rosh Chodesh because Tishrei has 30 days. Its 30th day is the first day of Rosh Chodesh, followed by the first day of Mar Cheshvan, which is Shabbat. So we have a Friday Shabbat, 2-day Rosh Chodesh, as was announced this past Shabbat, Shabbat Bereshit, in Mevorchim HaChodesh, and that's the story. I said that before, I'll try not to say it too many times, because there's more to the show. But that's where we're holding, on the brink of finishing with Tishrei and ushering in the new month of Mar Cheshvan. Because we don't say Tachanun after Yom Kippur for the balance of Tishrei, our custom here is to say Psalm 121 rather than 130. With that, Tehillim Kuf Kaf Aleph, Shir Lama Alot, Esa Einai El Heharim Me'ayin Yavo Ezri. Ezri Me'im Adonai Osei Shamayim Va'aretz. Al Yitein Lamot Raglecha, Al Yanum Shomerecha, Hine Lo Yanum Velo Yishan, Shomer Yisrael. Adonai Shomerecha, Adonai Tzilecha, Al Yad Yeminecha. Yomam Hashemesh Lo Yakeka, V'yoreach Balayla. Adonai Yishmorcha, Mikol Ra, Yishmor Et Nafshecha. Adonai Yishmor Tzeitecha Uvoecha, Me'ata V'ad Olam. Achenu Kol Beit Yisrael, Hanetunim Batzara Uvashivya, Ha'omedim Bein Bayam, Uvein bayabasha, hamakom yirachem aleihem, viyotziyem mitzara lirvacha, umeafela l'ora, umishibud l'geula, hashta ba'agala uvizman kariv, vinomar amen. The major theme at this moment for us is water. Rain and water. Aside from the predictions of a dry winter coming up in Israel and water levels at the Kinneret and others below the whatever they call them, the black line, the red line, and flooding in other parts of the world, from a Jewish religious perspective, we focus in on water at this moment for several reasons. Last Thursday, Shmini Atzeret, / in Israel, Simchat Torah, we said Tfilat Geshem, a prayer for rain. That inaugurated the period of the year from now until the first day of Pesach, where in every single prayer, Amidah, we refer to God as the Mashiv HaRuach Umorid HaGashem, the one who causes the wind to blow and the rain to fall. And a week from today, next Thursday night, this is Israel only, we begin asking in the weekday Amidah, asking for beneficial rain, with the words V'tein Tal Umatar Livracha. We finished the holiday of Sukkot last week, which the Mishnah tells us, as you will hear in the mini shir that I just gave the folders. It is the juncture of the year when we are judged for rainfall, and I elaborate on that shortly. And this week, Parshat Noach, where the main theme is the Mabul, the great flood that destroyed the world and every living thing except for those that were in the ark on the Teva together with Noach. So it is water, 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 rain, rain, rain. You will hear discuss the different types of situations with rain. Let me say them now, again. It's again because I already said it to the folders. It's will be again when you hear that recording. There are three possibilities. Two of them are not good. One possibility is drought / lack of rain. With different levels of seriousness, it's a big problem. Another situation is destructive rain. Flooding, hurricanes, tornadoes, monsoons, various and sundry other terms, again with different levels. Destructive. Right now, paper this morning mentioned 140 fatalities in some country. And then there's the third possibility, blessed, beneficial rain in the right amounts, in the right frequency, and at maximum benefit towards crops, towards water supply, towards groundwater levels, towards the reservoirs, etc., etc. That's what we're talking about. What I would like to do now is edit in to this recording the mini shear that I gave the folders a short while ago on this topic, and then we'll have more time to talk about a whole bunch of different things in Parshat Noach and hopefully also related to Rosh Chodesh. But for now, the mini shear to the folders. I want you to close your eyes and imagine as if you're sitting in that room with a stack of collated Torah Tidbits pages and you're busy folding while you are trying to listen to my words as well. With your permission, I want to get this water rain business a little straightened out. Let's start with a statement in the Mishnah in Masechet Rosh Hashanah that the world is judged at four times. On Rosh Hashanah, this is not the order in which it is in the Mishnah, but on Rosh Hashanah, our Rosh Hashanah, people are judged. Mi yechyeh, mi yamut, etc., etc. Who shall live, who shall die? The Rosh Hashanah yikatevun, written on Rosh Hashanah, uv yom tzom kippur yechatemun. Then there's Sukkot, referred to in the Mishnah as Chag, the quintessential holiday, and we are judged for water. A side question that is asked is, that's part of a human judgment. So what do you mean, four different parts? We're judged for rainfall, we're judged for grain, and we're judged for fruit. that really impacts on human beings. So they answer in some way that the judgment for waterfall is the bottom line. The world will receive a certain amount of waterfall in the course of a year. One area could be flooded, and 140 people already are reported dead in flooding in some country. And other countries have droughts. So that's not personal. That's the total. The personal judgment, the communal judgment, individual communities and in people, that's Rosh Hashanah. So on Sukkot, we're judged for water, and on Pesach for grain, and on Shavuot for the fruit of the tree. Now let's focus in on judgment for rain. If you want to have a very neat kind of arrangement, we can say judgment for people begins Rosh Hashanah and goes until the next judgment period, which means not only Rosh Hashanah, Aseret Yemei Teshuvah, Yom Kippur, and beyond, till Sukkot. Now, if we use Hoshana Rabbah as the final Chatima, and the Chazan on Hoshana Rabbah puts on a kittel, and the tunes are in the same style as Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, and we ask God, Chatmenu B'Sefer Chaim Tovim, seal us in the Book of Light, of Life, then we get the feel that the judgment for people begins on Rosh Hashanah and goes all the way through the first 21 days of Tishrei until the seventh day of Sukkot, also known as Hoshana Rabbah. And this works out neatly because on the following day, Shmini Atzeret, which here we call it Simchat Torah, and abroad Simchat Torah is the second day of Shmini Atzeret, that's not neither here nor there, the following day after the Chatima, the complete sealing of judgment for people, we say Tfilat Geshem, we start calling God the Mashiv HaRuach Umorid HaGashem, the one who causes the wind to blow and the rain to fall. And it appears as if that's the day on which the world is judged for rainfall. However, there's another Mishnah in Masechet Ta'anit where Rabbi Eliezer says we should start referring to God as the one who causes the wind to blow and the rain to fall from the first day of Sukkot, because that's the beginning of the rain issue. I say it like that because it either means the rainy season when it starts to rain, or it means the judgment for rain. In fact, we do a few things on Sukkot that give us the feeling that the judgment for rain is already the whole holiday of Sukkot, not just Shmini Atzeret. Specifically, there is, in the time of the Beit HaMikdash, water libation, Nisuch HaMayim, the pouring of water on the altar outside the Beit HaMikdash in the courtyard every day of Sukkot, which we understand has a connection to our being judged for rainfall. And then there's the Arba Minim, which are water-needy plants, and we're doing a mitzvah with them, also silently asking for a favorable judgment for rainfall. And the clapping of the Hoshanot, the beating of the Aravot on Hoshana Rabbah, is also connected with a petition to God for rain. Back to that Mishnah in Ta'anit, it was Rabbi Eliezer who said, therefore, we should start mentioning God as the rainmaker at the beginning of Sukkot. Rabbi Yehoshua says, no, that doesn't make any sense because we don't want it to rain on Sukkot. Sukkot, the mitzvah of Sukkah, in addition to building it, which depends on us, and decorating it, which depends on us, and putting proper schach on it, which depends on us, and inviting company, which depends on us, and preparing for meals, which depends on us, there's one factor that doesn't depend on us, and that's rain. If it rains, we don't have the mitzvah to do, and we don't want it to rain. And there's another Mishnah in Sukkah which says rain on Sukkot is a slap in the face from God. That's my own words, not the Mishnah's. Therefore, it seems that we sort of wait until Shmini Atzeret to mention God as rainmaker to say Tfilat Geshem, and we officially recognize that as the beginning of the rainy season. Now, a side point, which maybe isn't a side point, is that rainy season depends more on the January-February calendar than it does on the Jewish calendar. Everybody knows that this year Sukkot was early. Of course, I jokingly always say Sukkot was exactly on time, 15th of Tishrei, like it is every year. And it was September that was early, or October that's late. It's not, but we don't think that way. We think Pesach is early this year, Pesach is late this year. The fact is it's going to be late, because before Pesach we're going to add another month of Adar Sheni. The point is that to match our prayers with the rainy season, we would probably have some secular date, like in Chutz La'aretz, for the beginning of V'tein Talu Matar Livracha. The petition for rain in Chutz La'aretz is based on the solar calendar, with an adjustment because of the Julian versus Gregorian calendar. Let's not get into that. But the point is that if it's rain, it's seasonal. If it's seasonal, then it fits much better with September, October than it does with Tishrei. But religiously, which is what we are basing it on here in Eretz Yisrael, and to an extent in all over the world, religiously, the association is not with a date in September or October, but with Sukkot. Beginning of Sukkot, end of Sukkot, the whole of Sukkot, a little bit of that, and a little bit of that, and a little bit of that. The next phase comes next week in Israel, when we start on Thursday night, not tonight, but a week from tonight, when we start asking for rain 15 days after Sukkot, which is considered for us the beginning of the rainy season. And just to round out the picture, we have this week Parshat Noach, and Parshat Noach tells about the Mabul, the flood, and I've always noted, I can't say always, not when I was a baby, but from the first time I learned Mishnayot, I noticed the following. There is a date mentioned in this week's Torah reading, Noach, for the beginning of the flood. That is the 17th day of the second month, which most people say in this context means Cheshvan, Mar Cheshvan, not Iyar, which is called the second month only after Matan Torah, after Yetziat Mitzrayim. The Mabul began on the 17th of Mar Cheshvan. The Mishnah in Ta'anit says, if the 17th of Mar Cheshvan comes and it has not rained yet, individuals accept upon themselves to fast so that they can properly pray to God for beneficial rain. Which means the 17th of Mar Cheshvan is both a date associated with devastating rain, destructive rain, and a date that's associated with lack of rain. Besides devastating rain and lack of rain, there's one more thing, and that's what we ask God for. We don't ask Him for destructive rain. We don't ask Him for lack of rain. We ask Him for blessed, beneficial rain. Gishmei Bracha. Sfardim have a custom that when they hear the chazan in shul, in the repetition of the Amidah, say, Mashiv haruach umorid hageshem, the congregation answers, adds, chimes in with, Livracha. for a blessing. Later, when we start asking for Taul Umatar, we ask for Taul Umatar Livracha. We recognize that lack of rain is not good, and we certainly recognize that there is a destructive rain as well, and we're not asking for that either. So that pretty much is the story. The other angle that I explored in the lead tidbit is the concept of belief. In other words, if we call God the one who causes the wind to blow and the rain to fall, it implies, whether it's actually true or not individually, that's up to each person to decide, but it implies a belief that God has to do with the weather. Not that he created the world a long time ago, created laws of nature, and said to the world, carry on now according to the laws of nature that I have created. Unless we believe that God maintains a constant vigil, supervision, and control over this world today, then there's really no point, I shouldn't say it like that, then the words calling him a Mashiv HaRuach, a Morid HaGoshem, and the petition asking him, V'tein Talu Matal Livracha, don't make so much sense. It's not that you're going to the one who created something a long time ago and set it in motion and now has no control over it, so what are you asking for? It's got to go along with a belief that God is mechadesh b'chol yom tamid ma'aseh v'reishit, that he renews the acts of creation every day by his constant supervision and control of the world. And the stronger that belief is held by each of us, the more powerful our prayers will be, and hopefully they should all be answered, whether we say them right or not. I always ask God, answer my prayers favorably, the way they should be said, not necessarily the way they were said. And I think that goes for all prayer. And may we have a rainy season blessed with beneficial rain. And may a water shortage be alleviated. And may the situation of the groundwater be improved. And may our scientists and business people get working on more practical desalinization so that we can have water from the sea as well. And water is not just a symbol of Torah, it's a symbol of life, physical life and spiritual life.
We'll be right back.
We're back. You've been listening to Torah Tidbits Audio for Parshat Noach. It's also Rosh Chodesh Mar Cheshvan. Whether we'll get to that topic or not, I don't know yet. In the meantime, I want to revisit the flood. In the first half of the show, we spoke of the flood in the context of the whole topic of rainfall. And I want to look at it now at its effect on creation. I believe very strongly that we can view the event of the flood in the time of Noah as the continuation of the creation process that began with the words of the Torah at the very beginning, Bereshit bara Elokim et ha-shamayim ve'et ha-aretz. After the initial creation of something from nothing, what was left is the formation of the world and its running rules, the laws of nature. That mostly happened, I shouldn't even say mostly, that first happened during the 6 days of creation. That underwent a major adjustment in the form of the destruction of most of the world during the Mabul, the flood, and the recreation or reformation of mankind and life forms in general following the flood. First, before we talk more about this on a more whimsical level, I would like to put on a very pleasant song by the Irish Rovers. I believe, the words from a Shel Silverstein poem about the unicorn.
A long time ago, when the earth was green, there are more kinds of animals than you have ever seen. They'd run around and play while the earth was being born, but the loveliest of all was the unicorn. There are green alligators and long-necked geese, some humpty-backed camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, the loveliest of all was the unicorn. Now the Lord seen some sinning, and it gave him pain. He says, "Stand back, I'm gonna make it rain." He says, "Hey, brother Noah, I tell you what to do. Build me a floating zoo, and bring some of those green alligators and long-necked geese, some humpty-backed camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, don't you forget my unicorn." Now Noah was there to answer the call. He finished building the ark just as the rain started falling. He marched in the animals two by two, and he called out as they went through, "Hey Lord, I got your green alligators and long-necked geese, your humpty-backed camels and your chimpanzees, your cats and rats and elephants, but Lord, I'm so forlorn, I just can't see no unicorn." Now Noah looked out through the driving rain. Those unicorns were laughing and playing silly games. They're running and playing while the rain was pouring. Oh, them silly unicorns. They're green alligators and long-necked geese, some humpty-backed camels and some chimpanzees. Noah said, "Close the door, 'cause the rain is pouring, and I just can't wait for no unicorn." The ark rose up and drifted with the tide, and the unicorns looked up from the rocks and they cried, and the waters came down and sort of floated them away. That's why you'll never see a unicorn to this very day. It's okay, Mark, really, it is. It's okay, Mark, really.
Why did you say that?
Well, because you might think this is the ending to the song.
It's not.
But I'd have to tell your friends that in fact you'd be wrong.
Really?
You see, unicorns are magical, so the rain started pouring. They grew themselves some wings and they took to soaring. There were green alligators and long-necked geese, some humpty-backed camels and some chimpanzees. But if you're looking for the unicorn, don't be forlorn. The second star on the right and straight on until morn.
Allow me to use this very pleasant, whimsical song and poem to launch into a more serious idea. We have a tradition that before this world was created, God had created and destroyed other worlds. The number is actually given in one of our sources. I don't know its significance, 973 previous worlds. From our perspective, the major distinction is that previous worlds were created and totally destroyed, and this world was created, and when God reached that point where he wanted to destroy the world again, he decided against it because Noah had found favor in his eyes, and he decided to save Noah and his wife, Noah's three sons and their wives, and pairs of all the animals in the world. Without going into further detail, on the ark, where the world would be destroyed by a supernatural, we'll say, flood. I don't want to get into all of those details at the moment. I want to say that the material from which this world was formed was a composite and conglomerate of the materials previously created and destroyed, which is one way it is possible to explain fossils that are found of prehistoric animals which no longer exist. Question: do we find actual remains of dinosaurs, at least parts of them? The answer is yes. When did the dinosaur live? It's possible to suggest, not in this world, in a previous world created and destroyed, and the remnants of that particular life form and many, many others are to be found in the material from which God created and formed and shaped this world. So a lion was created in this world and continues to exist. A dodo bird was created in this world and went extinct several hundred years ago. A dinosaur might never have existed in this world, but its fossilized remains were in the raw materials from which this world was formed, and therefore we find them and we analyze them and we theorize all kind of things. And or it's possible that from creation until Noah, which spanned about 1500 years, little more, that during that time, laws of nature were not as we know them today. Those laws of nature were adjusted by the year of the flood. And during the pre-diluvian time, maybe certain animals existed that were not taken on to the ark and did not survive the devastation of the Mabul, of the flood. Again, without the details, which we would really have to go through if we wanted to really let this idea take hold, but that's not for now. The idea that an animal existed before the flood and did not survive would also explain the finding of remains of animals that no longer exist. As far as the timing is concerned, with the devastation of the flood, and as I keep referring to, the changes of laws of nature, the timing is, to say the least, not accurate. And the effect of the flood could have been to age remains of that which was destroyed in this world tremendously. But again, it's details to discuss some other time. The idea: creation of this world preceded by other worlds that existed and were destroyed. The 6 days of creation themselves not being clear whether they are one day, each day as we know it, a 24-hour period, or are they 1,000 years, or are they an eon in God's eyes, because human beings hadn't been created yet till the very end. One way or the other, we're talking about a period of time whose length is indeterminable, but could be used to explain the age of the earth as scientists find it through carbon-14 testing or whatever, and prehistoric animals and prehistoric human-like beings. From the flood on, and according to the song, all the animals got on, the alligators and the chimpanzees, etc., etc., but the unicorn didn't make it onto the ark, and therefore the unicorn no longer exists. Again, I say this is a whimsical idea, but I believe there is something to it in our thinking that animals which no longer exist became extinct as a result of the destruction of the flood, and the age, apparent age, of their fossilized remains was greatly accelerated by the pressures and chemical content of the rainwaters of the flood of the Mabul. I think it's important for us to at least take this as a concept, because what it shows is a deliberate plan on God's part, even if we perceive it as having undergone certain changes, of an elaborate creation rather than a snap of the finger creation. The problem with a snap of the finger creation is that we don't take the result seriously. When we see, at least the way it's described in Torah and in our Talmudic sources, as a long, deliberate process, then we tend to take the ideas more seriously, our responsibility towards the world more seriously, and I think that's a healthy thing. I would like to also include in this show the well-known piece by Bill Cosby called Noah and the Lord, which I will play for you shortly. It's a stand-up comic routine that has some beautiful points to ponder, concepts that it touches on. I don't even know if Bill Cosby had these things in mind when he said it. For example, you will hear an exchange between the Lord and Noah, where God says to Noah, after he's brought in all the animals, I want you to take out one of the hippos and bring in another. What do you want me to do that for? Because they're both male, and you need one male and one female. Ah, come on, he says. Why don't you change one of them? To which the Lord answers, you know I don't work like that. And I think that's such a very important idea here, which I don't know if I can do justice in generalizing, but it goes like this. God created the world and everything in it, and the laws of nature which are generally followed. Occasionally, mostly in the past, but occasionally, God suspends the laws of nature, and an open, obvious miracle occurs. If we say that Joshua, Yehoshua, asked God or demanded of God that the sun stand still, which means time stands still, this is not the normal thing that happens, but it was a one-shot thing, and the sun and the moon stood still, whatever that means. Regularly, God does not do that kind of thing. Special occasions only. The idea that God tells Noah to take out a hippopotamus and bring in another can be seen as the symbolic of the whole experience of the building of the ark and the flood. Question that is asked by commentaries is, why did God not just snap his divine finger, destroy everything except for Noah and his family, and two of each kind of animals, and seven pairs of kosher animals, and it's done? Certainly God is capable of doing that. But God wants human participation in a process that is so monumental, to say the least, and crucial to understanding of mankind. Noah was a partner. He built an ark 300 cubits long and 50 tall and 50 wide, 30 tall, whatever it was, and brought in animals and brought in food for the animals, which Nachmanides, the Ramban, says was physically impossible to complete. There's no way that two of each animal can fit into such an ark. There's no way that Noah could have built a larger one. There's no way he could have brought in a whole year's supply of food, which didn't spoil for the year, unless there was a supernatural ingredient to the whole thing, which there was. In which case, why didn't God just snap his own finger? Partnership is the answer. We relate to, we understand better when there was a basis on which a human being can relate to the description of a process in the Torah. I don't have more time for that now. I want you to hear the Cosby routine. Enjoy it, but also let it be food for thought. And on that note, I'll wish you now a Shabbat Shalom and a Chodesh Tov. Lehishtamea.
There's a fellow by the name of Noah, built an ark. Everybody knows he built an ark. He said, what did Noah do? He said, well, he built an ark. But very few people know about the conversation that went on between the Lord and Noah. You see, Noah was in his rec room sawing away. He was making a few things for the home there. He's a good carpenter. Vuba, 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 vuba. Noah. Somebody call? Vuba, vuba, vuba. Noah. Who is that? It's the Lord, Noah. Right. Where I am. What do you want? I've been good. I want you to build an ark. Right. What's an ark? Get some wood, build it 300 cubits by 80 cubits by 40 cubits. Right. What's a cubit? Well, don't worry about that, Noah. When you get that done, go out into the world, collect all of the animals in the world by twos, male and female, and put them into the ark. Right. Who is this really? What's going on? How come you want me to do all these weird things? I'm going to destroy the world. Right. Am I on candid camera? How you gonna do it? Gonna make it rain 4,000 days and drown them right out. Right. Listen, do this, you'll save water. Let it rain for 40 days and 40 nights and wait for the sewers to back up. Right. Of course, Noah had a heck of a job, really. He had to go out and collect all of the animals in the world by twos, two mosquitoes, male or female. And he had to keep telling the rabbits, only two, only two, only two. So we find Noah pulling up the last two animals, two hippos, and he's really in a hurry to get them up because he's afraid that the Lord's going to call him and ask him to do something else. And his nerves are shot. This is one heck of a job for a man 600 years old. So we find him pulling up the last two hippos, and of course the Lord does call him there. Come on, fat hippos, hurry up. Come on, will you please? Noah.
What?
What do you want? Gotta take one of those hippos out and bring in another one.
What for?
Because you got two males down there and you need to bring in a female.
I'm not bringing nothing in. You change one of them.
Come on, you know I don't work like that.
Well, I'm sick and tired. I've had enough of this stuff. I've been working all day, working on for days and days. I'm sick and tired of this.
Noah?
Yeah?
How long can you tread water?
Yeah, well, I got news for you. I'm sick and tired of this whole mess. The whole neighborhood's out there laughing at me. You're all having a grand time at good old Noah there. I went out and got my best friend, Larry. I said, Larry, listen, I've been talking with the Lord. Larry said, oh, really? I said, yeah, yeah. Lloyd, Larry Lloyd. You walked over there laughing. I hear them all up there laughing at me. You know I'm the only guy in this neighborhood with an ark. People around here laughing, picket signs, walking up and down. I'm sick and tired of this stuff here. People are walking around here. How you doing, Tarzan? How's everything up there? Sick and tired of this mess here. You're supposed to know all and see all. You let me go out there and bring in a pregnant elephant. You give me no manual for delivery and nothing. Never told me the thing was pregnant. Ask good old Noah waiting underneath the elephant there. Broom, right on top of the all and see all, like I said before. You let me go out there and do all this stuff here. You never even looked in the bottom of that ark. Have you looked down there? No. Who's going to clean up that mess down there? That's me. I'll tell you that. I've had enough of this. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm letting all these animals out, and then I'm going to burn down this ark, and I'm going to Florida somewhere because you haven't done nothing. I'm sick and tired of all this mess. You're fooling around, and you haven't done nothing, said, and you got it raining. It's not a shower, is it? Okay, Lloyd, me and you, right? Because I knew all